Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, August 16th, 2008. I'm Harley Schlanger and I'll be your host today. In 10 days, the Democratic Party will open its convention in Denver, Colorado. And according to all the media and the pundits, Senator Barack Obama is already the nominee and the convention would be a mere formality to serve as his coronation. Well, a funny thing is happening on the way to Denver. After word got out that Democratic National Committee Chair Howard the Scream Dean was not even going to allow Senator Clinton's name to be put in the nomination, a group of her supporters escalated their mobilization to overturn the attempted coup, which is being run through Howard Dean. The purpose of the coup was not only to defeat Senator Clinton in favor of Senator Obama, whose campaign had been backed from the beginning by speculator and financial predator George Soros, but to destroy forever the Franklin Roosevelt tradition in the party of representing the interests of the lower 80% of family income brackets who are being badly hurt by this financial disintegration. Supporters of Senator Clinton have taken her example of resolve and tenacity as a model and refused to give up on the possibility that she could still win the nomination. After all, she won more votes in the primaries than Obama did. Beginning with the Texas and Ohio primaries, she won 54% of the votes cast in the last primaries. She won most of the big states, including New York, New Jersey, and California, and the so-called battleground states, including Ohio, Florida, and Pennsylvania, that a Democrat has to win the presidency. Further, there's serious evidence that Obama's supporters won delegates in caucus states through fraud. Well, last Thursday it was announced that Senator Clinton's name will be put into nomination in Denver, and while the lying media is trying to dismiss this as symbolic, it means there's still a chance that she could win the nomination. Joining me on the program today is someone who's played a major role in ensuring that this chance still exists. Michelle Thomas has led a drive to collect signatures of delegates in accordance with DNC rules to provide an assurance that the Dean cabal could not keep Senator Clinton's name from being placed in nomination at the convention. And we just heard today that there will be a full roll call vote. And we'll be joined later in the program for our roundtable discussion by Ian Overton and Alicia Cheritani. So Michelle, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Harley, for having me.
Well, why don't you start by telling our listeners what you've been doing and why you decided to do this.
Okay, so basically I'm working with a group called HRC 300 Delegates, and it's a grassroots organization of Hillary Clinton delegates that has organized a petition which is in accordance with the DNC rules, and it is the right of the delegates to do this, that if 300 delegates sign a petition to put Hillary Clinton's name into nomination, that the DNC cannot block it. They have to accept it. Now, of course, Hillary Clinton would have had to sign that petition for it to move forward, but her delegates in this particular group that I am volunteering for had organized this and wanted to make sure that if she wanted that option, that it would be available to her.
And when you started this, it looked as though they were not going to let her be put in the nomination, right?
Yes, it was actually, which is what many Americans don't realize is, candidates' names are always put into nomination. And, you know, this only happened since 1884, I believe, that only four candidates haven't put their name into nomination. It's been a nomination through acclamation. And that is what Barack Obama wanted to occur this particular election as well. Now, people have to realize that Howard Dean's name went into nomination, and there was a floor vote. Ted Kennedy's name went into nomination, and there was a floor vote. So delegates are sent to the convention to represent the voters of their constituencies. Now, you have different kinds of delegates. You have pledge delegates, which are voted in by their constituents, and then you have automatic delegates, which are the superdelegates, and you have PLEO delegates, which are party leaders and elected officials. All these delegates go to the convention, they all count for one vote, and they go and vote for whatever candidate. Whoever
so if Dean would have kept Hillary Clinton's name from being put in nomination, then that doesn't that mean that 1,600 to 1,700 delegates who were elected to vote for her would have been denied that right to vote?
Absolutely, and that was the whole point of these delegates organizing, is that they basically, the 18 million voters that voted for Hillary are represented by the 1,670, you know, whatever the number is, delegates that are being pledged, delegates that are being sent to the convention on her, on their behalf. The voters are represented by these delegates, and the delegates go there and cast their vote for Hillary and represent the voters that voted for her. So basically, the Democratic Party wanted to silence half of the delegation and half of the voters of the entire primary. They wanted to silence them.
And you didn't want that to happen?
No. We felt that the process that is been put in place since 1882, they wanted to subvert the process for this particular primary. And they did it... you know, somewhat with Michigan and Florida, we know what happened with the Rules and Bylaws Committee meeting, and then they wanted to do it by not putting her name into nomination. And so, you know, some of the delegates that I, you know, they started organizing, and they read in the DNC rules that they can do this petition. So I'm a volunteer, I'm not a delegate, and I volunteered to help spearhead that petition drive. And it has been a completely grassroots movement, meaning Hillary's campaign has had nothing to do with it. We have had no contact with them whatsoever. You know, it would be nice if we would have had contact with them, because we could have got all the delegates' contact information. We had no contact information for any delegates. We had to find out who they were and literally Google their names to see if we can find their phone numbers. And we found about 80% of those phone numbers. And then I had to get delegates to contact delegates in states to see, inform them about, one, that Howard Dean was trying to subvert the process and not allow the roll call vote to happen. Many of our delegates, of her delegates, did not even know that. And so that was like a big part of it as well. It's like find out, you know, basically inform them, and then inform them about the petition. And so that is, you know, basically that's what I've been doing, is spearheading that petition. Well,
let me ask you this next question then, which is the obvious one. You were not necessarily political before you got involved in this. That is, you had a point of view, but you'd never done anything like this before. Why'd you decide to do this?
Well, it's true. This is the first election that I've ever become active in. And, you know, I know what happened in 2000. And I remember being very angry about what happened in Florida and the unjust events that occurred with the Supreme Court ruling to put George Bush into the presidency without counting all the votes in Florida. And then I also was angry about the fact that John Kerry didn't win. And I realized after that election that I actually never did anything to help him win. Like, I had never knocked on doors, I never made any phone calls, I didn't donate any money or anything like that. So this particular election, I decided that I would try to be a little bit more active, which I was. I became active in about January. I started watching the whole process unfold and initially got a gut reaction that there was something wrong with this election. And that was actually back in January, especially when I was watching all of the debates. And I was watching the pileup on Hillary Clinton from not only the moderators, but her fellow candidates that were just piling up on her in the debates. And then I also noticed it in the media bias, and especially when I would go to any website like Washington Post or CNN or the New York Times, I couldn't find links on her, and they were covered with links in Obama. In fact, I started counting them. Like, and it could be like 15 links of Obama and maybe two of her, and then you would look at the adjectives describing Obama, and they were always positive, and you would look at the adjectives describing her, and they were always negative. And so I knew there was something wrong with this election. And so I started researching and, you know, finally got into a couple of blogs. I'd never been in a blog before, and I started learning more from other activists that had the same sort of gut reaction that I did. So that's basically how I got involved. And I did volunteer in Pennsylvania for her and met a lot of great activists as well, and then just became more involved from there.
Did you find that there were a lot of people who had a similar evolution, that they started out interested in the campaign and they knew something was wrong, and they've actually moved to the point of becoming part of changing the problem?
Absolutely. It was amazing how many people had the exact same experience as I did. I mean, I'm talking the exact same moments of experience. Like, this moment changed my life. When he did this or they did this, I knew there was something wrong. I mean, I've had that conversation with hundreds and hundreds of people at the same exact moments that we knew something was really wrong with this election. And, you know, just how, I mean, for example, the, you know, the not seating of Michigan and Florida, the not dealing with Michigan and Florida for the entire primary, in which Hillary Clinton won those states very big. They were big states. There were 1.7 million people that voted. If she would have had those votes in her tally, those delegates in her tally, she would not have been behind, or if she was behind, not by very much. There wouldn't have been this drumbeat to get her out. I mean, they were trying to get her out after Iowa, and it was unbelievable.
You're listening to Michelle Thomas. I'm Harley Schlanger. This is the LaRouche Show. We will take email questions if you have them. You can send them to us at radio@larouchepub.com. That's LaRouchePub.com. And Michelle, I think the other thing that was important, that I've gotten to know you a little bit, and it, one of the aspects of what I think convinced you that you had to play a role is what you've seen with the economy, and why I think this is why you have a sense that Senator Clinton should be the nominee. But go back to what you were saying about the watching the debates and your reaction on this question of the economy.
Okay, so yes, I watched every single debate. I was very, you know, I've been watching him since last January. I think it was like the first one or something. I don't know, was it last February? I've watched every single debate. I wanted to know who was going to help our economy. Now, I invest in the stock market and have for a long time, and I was seeing the trends, and I could tell that our economy was suffering, and it was going in a bad direction, and there was no signs that it was going to be corrected. And so I started watching the debates, and I was very open. I mean, I didn't have a candidate whatsoever, and I was actually interested in Obama because I had seen his speech at the 2004 convention. I thought it was incredibly inspiring, and I was actually a little surprised that he decided to run so quickly after only being in the Senate for a year and a half, but I was interested in him. And I wasn't necessarily for Hillary, but I wasn't against Hillary. I know some people that were already like against her without giving her an open mind to actually watch what she had to say. So I was just very open to all the candidates. And I started watching all the debates, and I watched Obama, and I didn't feel that he had the experience, one, and was qualified based on what he was saying about the economy or his policies or his plans or healthcare plan or what have you. He didn't seem well-versed on any of the issues. And whenever Hillary Clinton would talk about what she was going to do, it was, she had very clear, concise policies that she could describe very specifically what she was going to do, and I can understand what she was saying. And so I also went to all of the candidates' websites and read all of their plans on how they were going to help the economy. And I believe that Hillary Clinton had the best plan. And this is before, you know, I got involved in January and started seeing what I felt like was wrong. I determined that Hillary was my candidate, I would say, back in November. I was like, she's just it. After watching all the debates, her policies to me were the best. And I mean that for the lower 80% of the population. And, you know, we need to get back to having policies that serve them, because right now the policies only serve like maybe the top 1%. And in the past 8 years, there's been a massive shift of wealth from the lower 80% to the top 1%. And so that is a problem, because when the middle class falls into poverty, the American dream is over. And we all know that we all did when we all do better, the economy does better. And I can tell you for a fact, I did a lot better when Bill Clinton was president. And I think everyone did better.
Well, Michelle, let me then ask you, as you've been doing this work and you started calling the delegates, and you said some of them weren't aware that she was not being put in the nomination, did you find that people were somewhat demoralized after the June 7th or June 8th announcement by Senator Clinton of suspending her campaign?
Yeah, we found there were variations of feelings about the within the delegates. You had the people that were very informed about what happened and were, you know, deeply disappointed in what happened. And so they're more the activists that came on board pretty quickly. Then you had some delegates that were less informed about, you know, maybe what happened, and they are also sort of people that towed more the party line. And when she said she suspended her campaign and got behind Obama, that's, you know, some of those people just said, we just need to get behind Obama because we can't have disunity in the party and we just need to do what Hillary says. You know, and others had a lot of fear because they have positions maybe in the party or, you know, from the party that they felt like if they participated in the petition that they would jeopardize their jobs or
what do you tell a delegate who says either they have to, for the sake of the party or party unity, they have to go along with this? How do you organize them to change their thinking?
Well, we weren't able to change everyone's thinking, but my pitch to them was one that, you know, it's not normal for a candidate's name not to be put into nomination. That's one of the first points that I'd make. And the other point I would make is that you are a delegate that is a Clinton delegate, and it's a high honor to be a delegate, and that you should take that very, very, very seriously. And that you are the voice of 18 million people. That's half the party. And this party half of the party cannot be silenced. It just can't. And so I believe that we need to uphold the democratic process and at the highest level. And the way to do that is to follow a process that has been put in place since 1882. And that is what we're doing with this petition. And it's going to be an historical document because I don't believe that any delegates have ever had to do a petition, even though it may have been in the rules, ever, to get a candidate's name put into nomination. And, you know, we were asking the delegates to come forward and, you know, maybe be courageous enough to come forward and stand for what we believed is defending not only our constitutional right, but the democratic process, the integrity of it. So that was our pitch. Now, we definitely have, you know, many of her delegates, I don't know the percentage, I would say 20 or 30%, that have moved on to Obama. And they just feel like, you know, there's going to be disunity and we're going to, you know, create too much chaos at the convention and so forth. And what we say to them is we believe the only way to unify the party is to allow everyone to vote, is to allow all the delegates go in there and do their job and let them vote for who they were sent for. And then the nominee is determined officially, and then everyone can move on and, you know, maybe get behind that nominee in November. I mean, that's up to the delegates. I can't tell the delegates what to do. You know, that's up to them. I mean, it's up to every American to decide what they're going to do in November. So. Mm-hmm. But we believe that the only way to unify the party is not silence half of the delegation, strong arm the delegation, but actually allow them to be part of the process, allow them to vote, and scream and yell if they want Hillary Clinton or do whatever they do at conventions that normally take place. And then simply, you know, go on from the convention and, you know, maybe be less resentful because they were blocked from voting or so forth, and, you know, allow the process to play out.
Well, I would say that it actually shows a weakness in the candidate if you have to silence the opposition. And I think if you look at what I said in the beginning, that after the Texas and Ohio primaries, over 54% of the votes cast were for Senator Clinton. So here you have someone really limping into the nomination and really only securing the nomination through this kind of intimidation and thuggery from people like Dean. Haven't you run into some of this from state chairmen and from other people trying to tell people not to sign the petition?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there has been a systematic isolation from the state party chairs and the head of the state party chairs, which is a guy named Mark Brewer, who is president of the Association of State Party Chairs. There's been a systematic isolation of her delegates from the Obama campaign. So the Obama campaign has taken over the DNC. The DNC has moved to Chicago. And therefore, all the state party chairs have become the Obama campaign. And so we've actually contacted these state party chairs saying, like, will you support us with this petition? Will you give us the Hillary delegates' contact information? Because we want to inform them about what's going on and maybe talk to them. Okay, none of these people got back to us. We called Mark Brewer's office several times, emailed him several times, asking him if he would actually support the petition. And being that, it's in the DNC rules, and it's a right of the delegates. We're not doing anything wrong. Well, Mark Brewer never got back to us either. Mm-hmm. Then Governor Rendell actually emailed out to all his delegates to not sign the petition. And we had some trouble getting delegates to sign the petition in Pennsylvania because they were nervous about it. You know, they were warned by their governor. Now, that really shocked me because Pennsylvania went big for Hillary.
Right.
I mean, I am talking big for Hillary. And Governor Rendell was a really big supporter of hers. Then we had in Indiana, the state party chairs informed all our delegates not to sign a petition because they did not want to jeopardize Evan Bayh's chances in becoming VP if some of the Indiana delegates signed a petition. We had a lot of trouble in Indiana as well. We had strong support in California, Texas, New York, Massachusetts, West Virginia, Kentucky. I know there's a lot of strong arming going on right there, even though she won that state by 36%. We had incredibly strong support in Arkansas, and you know we've had delegates sign it pretty much from every single state. Mm-hmm. And Washington's is a really strong delegation up there. Oregon, she's got some really strong Clinton delegates that are a major part of organizing this petition. Arizona, we have really great delegates there, and Colorado, and and then the other ones were, you know, just trying to inform. But those, I would say, the delegates that organized this thing came from Texas, they came from Washington, and Oregon and Colorado. Those are the people that came forward first to push this thing.
Michelle, what was your reaction on Thursday when you heard that the Dean and Obama blinked and said, okay, she can put her name into nomination, and then today the announcement that there will be a roll call vote?
Well, I reacted kind of like, wow, we did it. One, because I do believe that the petition had a lot to do with the pressure that was put on the Obama campaign and the DNC, because we issued a press release that went national and international, and it was all that was talked about for about 10 days, and the DNC was getting numerous phone calls about it. The Obama campaign was, and Hillary's campaign. There was a lot of chatter. There's a lot of pressure. And, you know, they knew we were going to reach our 300 number and a petition signed. And so, it felt great. Like, we had accomplished something, and that it was also, like, a big example to me that, you know, a few people who believed in something strongly could actually do something. And that, I will never forget that, for one. The other reaction I had to it was that, Obama's statement saying that of course he was going to put her name into nomination and he would graciously do this to allow her supporters to vote, that made me not so happy, because I know for a fact that his campaign and the DNC has been systematically trying to isolate us, block us, ridicule us, and isolate the Clinton delegates from even communicating with each other. And I know that has been, you know, the experience of all of my delegates across the state. So when I said that, I was just, so he's trying to act like he's the guy, he's the man, of course, you know. But I, you know, we know the truth about it.
Well, and I also know that you're not going to stop till you get the signatures. What can the listeners of this program do to give you some backup?
Well, I mean, our main thing is, okay, we have, phase one was to get the floor nomination. We have that now. Phase two is delegate retention. So we believe, you know, I don't know the percentage, I really don't, because it's not like we've been able to contact all of her delegates because, again, we don't have the contact information. We've just gone off a major grassroots campaign. I'm assuming we've maybe lost 20 or 30% of our delegates. You know, we want them back, and we want the constituents, you know, across the states to find out who their delegates are that are representing the Clinton delegates in their area and see if you can contact them and let them know that you hope that they go to Denver and represent your voice. And what we want to do is we want to, you know, persuade these delegates that, you know, to not do what the constituents sent you to do is a violation. And we want you to take your responsibility very, very, very seriously, because I'm not a delegate, but God, I wish I was, because I would find it to be a high honor to represent those voters. I would take it very, very seriously. And we want these delegates back in our zone. We want them to go to the floor and vote for Hillary when they have the opportunity. So in that, to me, that's what your, you know, your viewers can do. Is it, you know, if you know your delegates in your area and you can go to the DNC, I can't remember the DNC website, and there is a list of the delegates. You can look up certified delegate list for the DNC. You can Google that. And then you can find out you can download your state, and then you can find out who your delegate is in your congressional district or your at-large district. And, you know, contact them and ask them, you know, to represent your voice.
Okay, now I know you've got work to do, but I'd like to give either Ian or Alicia an opportunity to ask a question if they have one. Alicia, did you have anything you want to ask Michelle?
Well, she almost nearly answered it there at the end. I was just going to ask you, Michelle, that we really can't, at this point, lose to Obama, because that has implications for the rest of the world as well. And I know what we're committed to doing in the next 10 days and beyond, but I just wanted to hear from you what you think the most effective thing to do to secure Hillary's nomination and send a clear message to the people in Obama's camp, and really, more importantly, the people controlling Obama, and how do we just organize the delegates to elect Hillary as a nominee?
Well, I mean, we know that it's a small chance that we can pull this thing off. And, you know, my main goal right now is what I, you know, like I said, phase two. I need to get my delegates back. So I am, you know, I'm working on those strategies right now within the group that I'm in, which we have a group of 400 delegates that are in a Google group right now that are all over the country, and, you know, we are working with strategies with them to go to the convention and, you know, have whips that, you know, when we get on the floor, motivate them back in the fray. And we have to have persuasive enough arguments for this. And but the problem is that that's, you know, those are our pledge delegates. So I think that the Americans that voted for Hillary need to let their pledged delegates know they want them to honor their responsibility. I think that's a really big thing that the average person can do. What I'm trying to do is to make sure that we get her delegates back with it at the convention. And so we are putting in strategies in place to do that. Then you have the superdelegates. The superdelegates are, you know, all part of the party, and you have the PLEO delegates as well. These are party leaders and elected officials, and then you have the superdelegates, governors, senators, you know, however many there are, 800 or something. They have to come around. Now, that is where the difficulty is, because they are towing the party line. And many of these people are very fearful of actually maybe doing the right thing and choosing who would be the most electable candidate, which I still believe is Hillary. I believe Hillary can win this thing. I have doubts about Obama being able to pull this off. And there's been many people that have been contacting the superdelegates to switch back to Hillary. I think many of them are fearful of doing that. So I don't have an answer to that, to be honest with you. I would hope that they would do the right thing, but I have my doubts about that.
I think, Michelle, you've given a fairly good hint as to the impulse tendency behind them, which is that if they look at the November election and the fact that Obama, despite being the presumptive or presumptuous nominee, is still running neck and neck with a virtually non-existent John McCain. And on top of that, he has no policies that would win over the people who supported Hillary Clinton. And I think that's where, on the economic question, what I find so compelling about your presentation is that you connect this question of the economic crisis and the necessity for a candidate who will take on these policies to the technical side of it, as opposed to merely those who are sort of stuck in the, gee, it was unjust, it was fraudulent, it was corrupt. Yes, it was, but why? What's behind this?
What's behind it? And you know, I mean, like, I pray. I mean, I would give, like, all of my money to get in front of these superdelegates and these party leaders and make a little speech to them. I would like to say to them that we have a lot of Americans that are hurting right now, and we need to take this very seriously. And this is not about towing the party line. This is not about having fear. Like, I need leaders. I need leaders. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin. I need you guys to stand up and say, we need to do the right thing by the American people. Not worry about money in our pockets, not worried about this power position that we're going to get, and we need to do the right thing. I wish that I could get that opportunity. I know I won't, because I'm just a photographer in Los Angeles doing this thing out of my apartment, but those are the kinds of questions I've been asking myself throughout this election is, where are the leaders? Where are our party leaders who are willing to come forward and saying, we need to stop this, you know? We need to stop, like, you know, subverting a process that's been put in place forever. We need to stop doing everything that we can to help one candidate and block another one. We need to consider the fact that we have a large delegation of Democrats in this country that are hurting right now, and that, you know, we can't take a chance on the next 4 years. Like, we can't risk 4 more years of having bad leadership to get us out
right.
of it. You know, but I don't think I'm going to get that opportunity. Now, I know that I pray that I would, but because I think if I got it, I could get some of them on board.
Well, but, I think you absolutely could, Michelle, and I hope some of them might have been listening today, or those of our listeners can direct the superdelegates in your state to the LaRouche Show site on the LaRouche Pub website, and get them to listen to it so they could hear what Michelle has to say to them, and maybe we can still pull off that miracle. Michelle, I know you have work to do. Thanks so much for joining us today, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you, Harley. Thank
okay.
you to everybody else. Take
okay.
care. Bye.
Bye. All right, so we'll continue now with our panel. We do have a couple of questions on emails. I'll take them up in just a couple of moments. Ian, I know you're working very hard to expose the Soros Dean coup in the Democratic Party. You're, of course, up in the Bay Area, where one of the leaders of that coup is Nancy Pelosi. What's the sentiment among Democrats up in the Bay Area for the treacherous role that Pelosi has played by working with Dean and Soros to sabotage the campaign of Senator Clinton?
Well, Harley, probably the easiest way to get a sense of how people feel is just to drive up Grand Lake Avenue and you'll see the marquee of the Grand Lake Theater, which often puts her the phone number of her office up there, asking people to call in and complain about her violation of constitutional law for withholding impeachment.
Well, that's a start. But when you go out and organize, and you've been getting out, I know, a lot of the Soros pamphlets there. This is for those who are new to this program or don't know too much about what we're doing. What the LaRouche movement has been doing is taking the pamphlet that exposes George Soros's role in literally buying out the Democratic Party, using money to destroy the candidacy of Hillary Clinton in favor of Barack Obama. And we have the whole story of Soros's role as from the time of his collaboration with the Nazis at the age of 14 in Hungary in the 1940s, up through his destruction of national economies, his betting up the price of oil, and so on. So, Ian, we've been getting that pamphlet out a lot. What reaction do you get when you put together what Michelle was talking about, this corrupt process in the Democratic Party? Do people get it? Do you find a lot of people angry?
Well, probably the first response when you go after Obama as being a Manchurian candidate is that they say, well, wait, are you supporting McCain? And you can, once you get past that initial hurdle that actually it's about policies and the survival of our nation, then, yeah, people understand it fairly easily. And it's actually kind of funny because everyone is walking around generally with this idea, well, the media, that's created by the media, that, well, you know, everyone seems to be supporting Obama and that's just the way it is and he's the nominee because that's what the media is trying to say. And so once you begin to poke at them a little bit and show them what's really going on, almost inevitably, I'd say probably 80% of the people that I've spoken with in San Francisco or the East Bay, which are Obama strongholds, I mean, he won those areas, they say, yeah, you know, I always thought there was something fishy about this, or, you know, yeah, I don't like George Soros, oh, so that's what's going on. So it's really quite different from the way it's being portrayed, the way he's being puffed up in the media.
Now, Alicia, one of the things that's striking to me from hearing the discussion from Michelle is this idea that here's someone who wasn't an activist before, who's concerned, but as she said, she'd never done anything to really direct policy, and so she came to this initially from a sense of injustice and something wrong, and now she's, as you could see, she's clear on economic issues. She's fighting with this idea that this is what the citizens should do. Do you have a sense that this is a broader movement nationally, that there are many, many more people who have come into politics partly because of the crisis and partly because they feel as though they've been cheated in the way that the election unfolded on the Democratic side?
Yeah,
Alicia?
I think that people definitely, they smell something. They smell the smoke. They don't know where the fire is, but they know something is wrong. Kind of like how she was describing, you know, watching the whole debate process and going online and not seeing the links for Hillary. And you can get a sense overall that there's just something subtly but very fundamentally wrong with the whole picture. And what we have going on right now is an effort to consolidate that for the population and draw it together for them, draw a picture for them. Why it would be useful to get someone like Hillary Clinton out of the position of the Democratic nominee. And if you give them that broader picture, what we're finding is that there's an incredible amount of people, young people, older people, that know that something's going on, but it's not until you give them the larger historical picture that they're transformed from just being angry about it, you know, putting a bumper sticker on their car or, you know, getting on their blog. They're transformed into saying, oh, there's actually a mission for the country being subverted by these ultimately top financiers using Obama like a puppet. I'm going to do something about this. I'm going to do something for my country. I'm going to do something for my family. And mm-hmm. that's the most effective, necessary thing that we've got to, and we've been able to do it generally this entire time, and I think that's why this Hillary delegation and supporters have converged with the organizing that we're done, because we bring them the sort of consolidated historical overview of what's actually going on with the country.
Well, we do have a couple of emails, and unfortunately they seem to have disappeared on my computer here. A couple of emails from Northern California. Robert Glover, I think, is one of them, asking about the pulse of the nation and also what's going to happen at Denver, especially if it rains up at Denver. I don't think you can rain on the intention of people to win back the party and the nation. The problem is that, as Michelle was pointing out, there are many people who have just gotten cynical, who really don't think there's anything they can do about it. And as a result, you have a kind of defeatist mentality. Now, part of that was the incessant pounding that was done against Senator Clinton. And I think the only response to that is that, as we're seeing, I was at a conference last weekend of people from a variety of different groups who want an open convention. And the fact is that it's now going to be, at least to some extent, an open convention. Senator Clinton's name will be placed in nomination. There will be a roll call vote. Now, we're coming into this election, into this convention, with a very serious problem. We just saw George Soros, the same George Soros that funded the Dean takeover of the party, that same George Soros was responsible, or is responsible, for the government of Georgia, which nearly got us into World War III. And so I think this is an interesting point that we have to make to people, is that we actually have people who are becoming conscious of policy, are becoming interested, and that's why we're putting out the Soros pamphlet. That's why we have the pamphlet with LaRouche's webcast, where he talked a lot about the Obama question, and also the DVD. Ian, talk a little bit about the effect you've seen of the 1932 DVD, which was subtitled The Lessons for Denver. The idea that what happened with Franklin Roosevelt in 1932 has applications for today. How do you see the effect of the DVD so far?
Well, there have been several people who have told me they've watched the film, and for some people, I'm not so sure how clear the connection is, but for a number of others, it's really a transformative experience where they begin to realize that first, there's actually a more historic reason why you would have a party try to keep someone who's actually talking about a plan for the economic crisis out of the nomination process. And so from that standpoint, when people watch this, they begin to get a sense of who this person's character was. This, which everyone knows, that Franklin Roosevelt was a necessary president. We wouldn't have a country now if it hadn't been for him then. So when they begin to get a sense that you have the development of a person's character over a longer term, looking back into the origins of this country and the people who fought against the tyranny of a colonial company system, who stood up and articulated this and got the popular vote and got the backing of certain people there in the party, they begin to get a sense that this is something that has happened before, and it's not just something that is, it's not just that Hillary's being mistreated because she's a woman. It's actually, she's being mistreated because she's following in this tradition to a closer and closer degree. So I think as people begin to think more, and it begins to sit in with them, and they begin to discuss some of the aspects of the film, those historical parallels or continuity, if you will, begin to come into much clearer focus.
Well, I think also as people get a sense that we're in a complete breakdown crisis, it's not just a recession or a depression, but a complete breakdown crisis, then you begin to see a light bulb go on where people begin to hear Obama talk about hope and change, and it's just a couple of words. It means nothing. And I think this is the other point here that's so critical, is getting across the deeper implications of the fight between the British system and the American system. Now, Alicia, I know on the LaRouche PAC website, which you're working on right now, we just added something this week, the Gore video, and what else? I understand there's a plan to do something on what happened in 1989. What's the significance of that one that's in the works?
Well, it's actually an interval of time. It's basically the period between John Kennedy's assassination through the historic but missed opportunity of 1989 when the Soviet Union collapsed. And there was a real change, potential for change in economics and political system. And so what we are working, we have a team of about 7 or 8 people right now reviewing that period of time, and we're going to put this out so it can be used for the convention. And the idea is that people need to understand when, why, and how this country became divorced from the industrial powerhouse that it was after World War II. And my generation doesn't understand that. The generation above mine doesn't either. And the baby boomer generation was too stoned to figure it out. So in this about an hour-length film, we're going to figure out how to best communicate what actually happened to the nation so people get a sense of what's actually, when we say there's a financial collapse, what's actually coming down. Most people don't know that the resources in the Soviet Union, as they were being looted, became a real big basis for a lot of the bubbles that Greenspan put into play in the late 1980s and early 90s. And people get a sense of what the size of the snowball, so to speak, that's coming down right now. They'll get a sense of sort of the systems that were put in place after Roosevelt died to make sure that there was no more development. There was always some sort of consolidation of wealth for rich oligarchs to use and really abuse. And what's interesting is that the more work we do on this period, the clearer the role of Lyndon LaRouche has become. The first forecast he made in forecasted a recession in the late 1950s and early 60s. And from that point on, because he understood the system that was put in place, he understood what Roosevelt was trying to do, and the system that was put in place after he died, which was contrary to what Roosevelt's intention was, he was able to forecast the dismantling of a productive economy, the United States economy. And what we're basically doing is an outline of LaRouche's forecast and how he was the leadership presidencies in this country and other nations, and he was also the target of an incredible amount of political warfare. And his absolutely relentless optimism to turn not just this country around, but the rest of the world, the planet, the whole future of the planet. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to see LaRouche's role just inevitably in this recent period.
Well, I think we also, just reflecting on the discussion we've had on the program today, if you think about the initiative that he took going back into the summer of 2007, which really provided leadership for the Democratic Party, where Lynn went through, first of all, the importance of the collapse of the auto sector and an alternative to that. Then in July 2007, his point of his webcast was that the system has already crashed. And shortly after that, Bear Stearns went under. We saw the so-called credit crunch. And now we're seeing the continued collapse of production, the so-called subprime crisis, the collapse of the banking system, 1,400 banks on either the serious or critical list of the FDIC. And all of this was part of what Lyndon LaRouche said should be the topic of discussion in the Democratic Party. And after New Hampshire, from New Hampshire forward, increasingly Hillary Clinton, Senator Clinton, addressed these issues, perhaps not as fully as we would like, But on the foreclosure situation, she called for a moratorium, which was along the lines of LaRouche's Homeowner and Bank Protection Act. On the economy in general, she raised the question of why are we continuing these free trade agreements when globalization is crashing the financial system? It's leading to a net outflow of jobs in the United States and so on. So what we've seen is that the issues that Lyndon LaRouche was raising in 2006, 2007 became the central features, or should have been the central features, of 2008. And that's why Obama was put up as a candidate against her, so that the issues could be completely ignored or blurred in favor of vague promises, rock star persona, and thuggery within the Democratic Party, as Michelle was describing. So, Ian, given this situation, with the convention 10 days away, what are the plans of the LaRouche youth up in the Bay Area to try to generate a bigger mass effect coming into the Democratic convention?
Mm-hmm. Well, first off, when you organize, you have to actually give people a sense of the bigger picture. And so in order to do that, we're actually joining forces with some of the groups here to increase the outreach. That's one thing. But I mean, the way that you organize is you want to just be everywhere all at once. So we've been organizing up a town hall meeting that's going to be coming up on the opening day of the convention in San Francisco. There's going to be a lot of good discussion there. Then also we've been down in San Jose, which is another huge population center. And we've been the way that we deploy is we're hitting large numbers of people all at once through organizing at transit points.
Ian, let me just ask you, because I just think there are some people who have sent in emails to the program from Santa Maria. I don't know if that's how close that is to the Bay Area, but why don't you give a phone number in the Bay Area if someone wants to attend the event that you're having, and when is it? What's the date of your town meeting?
Mm-hmm. It's on August 25th at the Women's Building in the Mission District. And it's going to be from 7:30 p.m. till about 10 p.m.
And why don't you give a phone number where someone could reach you if they're interested in attending?
Mm-hmm. Okay, it's 510-599-1776.
Okay, so anybody who's in the Bay Area on that's on Sunday, right? Sunday night?
It's a Monday.
Monday. Okay, so the opening night of the convention, not much is going on then. You'll miss Nancy Pelosi, I think. So that's a good thing to miss. So in Oakland, in the Bay Area, San Francisco, there'll be a meeting to discuss what can be done to take back the Democratic Party as part of taking back the Franklin Roosevelt tradition. Anything else? What you're going to be getting out DVDs and be all over the Bay Area, I guess.
Well, another thing that's happening is that on the 26th, the following day after work, there's going to be a march from the Ferry Building all the way down to the United Nations Plaza. This is being put on by the 18 Million Voices group, and at the UN Plaza, there's going to be a rally to kind of be as a public town hall meeting that is just open on the streets. I mean, the one on the day before is, of course, public also, but this one's going to be right there on the streets with a sound system to bring it even more into the public view of what really is at stake here in the country and what can be done about it. And that is something that we expect a lot of people to be participating in.
Okay. Now, I know, look, a lot of people are saying, what's going to happen in Denver? I mean, no one knows at this point. In the last 48 to 72 hours, we've seen some significant shifts. The Dean Obama grouping had to acknowledge, as Michelle was talking about in the first half of the program, that they could not leave out half of the Democratic Party, or more than half of the Democratic Party. So Senator Clinton will be addressing the convention on Tuesday. There will be her name and nomination and a roll call vote. But I think also it's important that people realize that this is not happening in a vacuum, that as we're seeing the events unfold leading in the Democratic Convention, we had a near outbreak of World War III, which was only avoided by decisive action by President Medvedev and Prime Minister Putin of Russia. There's quite a bit of material up on the website, on the LaRouche PAC website, for people who want to read that. But I think this is just another whole chapter in the Soros story. I mean, Alicia, were you surprised by the extent to which the government of Georgia, is actually almost a wholly owned subsidiary of George Soros?
Yeah, people had a hard time finding anybody in the government of Georgia who wasn't some appendage of George Soros' Open Society. And so it really functions as a tight-knit, incestual family. And I think that's why they can't think very straight to do what they had attempted to do, which is provoke one of the largest superpowers on the planet, Russia, thinking that the Russians were going to foolishly march themselves into World War III, which is not what the case was. But what governed Russia's actions was that they were going to defend their citizens wherever they were on the planet. And that implies a lot, and I think that's really kindred to what the intention of the United States at its best is. And that's why people like George Soros just are never going to win, because we have the history, and you have that fiber in large parts of the population in Russia, in the United States, internationally, who see that is the most potent thing to organize your government around. And Soros and his crowd are launching operations using Barack Obama as their puppet and Saakashvili in Georgia as their puppet. And I think that they've been heavily, heavily set back, which means, I mean, who knows, maybe it means they're going to try to escalate in Denver. I'm not quite sure I wouldn't make that claim, but we have to keep an eye on these people because their system is coming to an end. Their financial system that keeps them alive is coming to an end. And they're obviously, what they've shown us is they're willing to do just about anything to keep it alive, including destroying any sort of real FDR tradition inside the United States. So if people are clear on that, if people are clear on the overall world situation and how these operations are being run and operate and organize from that standpoint, then we'll win and it will work.
Well, I think it's interesting. Michelle raised the important point. Where are the leaders? And we saw in the situation in Russia and Georgia that Putin and Medvedev did not back down and play by the rules that were set up by the British Empire. And similarly, former President Bill Clinton and Senator Hillary Clinton did not accept the rules that were laid down by Soros' puppet Howard Dean. And so in both cases, we've seen a change in the overall strategic geometry. Now the other active ingredient, which has to be fully visible between not just now and next a week from this coming Monday, that is the opening of the convention on the 25th, but beyond that, is we have to have a mass movement, a movement of leaders, of people from the lower 80% of family income brackets who bring us back to the traditions of Franklin Roosevelt. This has been the fight that has been waged by Lyndon LaRouche in his presidential campaigns, and he's not a candidate this time, but this is what he was committed to in bringing out the kinds of issues. As he said, we need the policies, the ideas of Franklin Roosevelt, and we then will find if there's a candidate who will rise to that occasion. I think that what happens in Denver will reflect these events strategically and internationally in ways different than most people expect. But of course, there's no scenario, there's no way you can predict it. So I presume that what we do know is that Michelle and her team with the Hillary, the HRC 300 delegates group will continue their mobilization. We will continue our mobilization to destroy George Soros and everything he represents as a British imperial attack on the Democratic Party using Barack Obama as their hand grenade to blow it up. So we're going to be mobilizing. Watch our website. Watch what happens over the next couple of days and look for more intelligence assessments from Lyndon LaRouche on LaRouchePact.com and LaRouchePub.com. We're about out of time. Ian and Alicia, thanks very much for joining us. We'll be back next week, as always, on Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern for the LaRouche Show.